prevention of chronic disease, or preventive health care in particular, is delivered in different aspects of the healthcare system. And I guess my research, what I'm really keen to be doing, is looking at how do we coordinate and how do we actually join up that working with different aspects of the health system to then deliver better chronic disease programs for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
And when you're referring to different aspects of the health system, what exactly are you talking about?
So the emphasis of my research is in the Indigenous primary healthcare sector. And working with them over the last 10 years or more, I've noticed that those organisations want to work in their communities and join up the programs that are happening in their communities to then coordinate the delivery of care. So the kind of organisations in the community, people might be aware of things like the National Heart Foundation walking programs, government-funded quitline services. There's lots of initiatives that primary healthcare services themselves do in the community where they increase people's awareness about good food and skills in cooking, smoking programs. There's things that go on in the community that would be great to have them more coordinated so that we improve chronic disease in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
And I guess to insert your research, you're looking at bridging the gap between these primary healthcare facilities and these community organisations. Why might they not be communicating with one another? Why is there that divide at the moment?
Well, I guess one of the major reasons is just the acute care nature and the burden of disease with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. People come in and they're unwell, and it makes it very challenging for primary healthcare providers to actually think about prevention when the burden of disease is so great. So workforce and capacity is a big issue. In many Indigenous primary healthcare services, for example, there's a high staff turnover. So being able to get a coordinated, you know, understanding of what's going on becomes quite difficult as well. Funding models are another one. Barriers, just not knowing what's in the community, what's out there. So there's a range of things that are actually stopping services and the providers actually working out in the community.
To go to some of the results that you've found there, what is the benefit of having a cohesive system in terms of primary healthcare working alongside these organisations? Like, what sort of benefits do you see coming from that?
Two services had a look at their data, and one of the things that they found was diabetes was obviously a big issue, but particularly management of part of the condition called HbA1c, which is sugar levels in the blood. So one service decided to run a diabetes education day, which ran one day for every week, and they would provide education sessions around what is diabetes, why it's important, about monitoring your HbA1c levels, cooking skills, all sorts of things. So it created a social network where those clients would come together at the health service and provide this education program. Whereas another service actually thought that they would go out to their community, and it was in a more remote setting. So they went out and they did storyboard telling underneath a tree with local community members, talk about where sugar comes from, why it's important to go back to the clinic and have your HbA1c levels monitored. So what that does is that it raises their issue around, what is this HbA1c? It's sugar in your blood. Where do you get sugar from? How do you actually decrease the amount of sugar that you take in? Go back to your clinic, have it tested so that you can either prevent the onset of diabetes or manage the diabetes.
I guess that raises an interesting point, because to tackle, I guess, this divide and try and resolve this problem here, it's also insert the community in which you are targeting and a practice that might work for them to want to either go to a service or go to a clinic.
So we work a lot on the supply side in terms of making sure that the health system has the resources and has the staffing, and we have that. But it's also the demand side from the community and saying, increasing their awareness about what's important and why they should be going to the clinic or to be engaging in programs that will increase their awareness or increase their skills. And also in terms of the context, because we know that not all systems or all communities have the same, you know, one size doesn't fit all. They're all very different. So they have to be locally needs and, you know, meet the aspiration of those community needs. So the delivery of services meets what they want.
If they don't have a system that's working for that community, do you see that people aren't even going to the clinic or an organisation? Are they just not seeking any help?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are pockets like that for sure. I mean, I don't think that's just for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. I think that it's more broadly, we tend to go to our clinic or our doctor when we're unwell rather than when we're well. That's just the nature of the system at the moment. One of the things that we do know, more Aboriginal people employed in a health service, the more culturally appropriate, the more likely that an Aboriginal person feels more comfortable going to an Aboriginal service, and they provide care to an Aboriginal person in the right way. So one way in terms of doing that is increasing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander workforce involvement and employment in the sector.
Do you see this research as kind of a baseline to usher in these changes somewhere down the line, or I guess push political action to put funding into perhaps these employment programs or health services? How do you see this research making an imprint?
So I guess what I hope to have by the end of this research is a range of evidence-informed linkage interventions, the way that we can work out in the community, provide an explanation of how health services have implemented these linkage interventions, what factors have driven their success, and then be able to provide some information back to policymakers and decision makers around, you know, what's required to support this to happen more broadly.
How confident are you that they might pick up on this information?
Well, I think that's interesting. I mean, I think that the whole idea of people working together is intuitively attractive. I mean, everybody, we want to be able to make better use of our prevention budget. And we don't have a lot of prevention budget, so we do have to make sure that it works. The thing about the linkage or the intervention work is that we know that there is pockets of it happening, but we need to be able to say, well, how do we scale that up? How do we roll it out more broadly? And I think that there's an appetite for how do we actually get better at coordinating what we're doing, but it needs to be evidence and informed. My research in terms of being able to facilitate that on the ground, so I'm very much a hands-on researcher and we're on the ground doing these changes and at the same time engaging policymakers and decision makers in that process as well. So management of clinic services and other organisations will be involved in the process so that they can come along with the ride and see things happen over time.